You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. This is Radio Tacoma, 101.9 LPFM. And we are Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. And today we have the pleasure of bringing Bethany Reed to the listeners, who, and that is spelled R-E-I-D, for those of you that don't know Bethany.
You mentioned Holly Hughes earlier in our conversation. She writes about Ashley's Book of Knots. And when I discovered that my father had a copy, I immediately took it home with me.
So that's where these came from.
Yeah, and just played with the lexicon and decided I had a poem there. So this is what I wrote. The Keeper of Knots Undone. A knot is like an egg. It is either good or it is rotten. Clifford W. Ashley, Ashley's Book of Knots. Loops of bowline and crowfoot, sheep shank and lanyard, what scaffolds, bridles, braids us together, parceling, worming, marling, bite, stretch tight, scuttlebutt lashing, fingers gnarled, cable fixed, hooked, trussed, we're stirruped and coaxed, bound, jammed, joints unjoined, nooses unstrung, mouth a chained sinnet of curses. Who holds fast or knows how to rove through the rigging? Ancient, artful, herringbone stitch, hitched, fetched, hands twined, twice laid, matted, mated, kinks kinked, tackle untrimmed. The keeper frets and galls, chafes, whatever tethered us, holds, hobbles, we are haltered and hammocked, hauled, chafed, raveled, foxed, shrouded, no cleat left us, not a chinkle.
That is a knotty melody there. You could almost sing it.
Yeah. Don't ask me what every term means.
Well, you won't find them all in the dictionary. I can assure you of that. I found few of them, but I didn't find all of them.
Uh-huh. Well, you need Ashley's Book of Knots.
Mm-hmm. With beekeeping, this is an extended metaphor of sorts, isn't it? It's nice to see something like that that goes beyond just the phrase or the sentence.
Yeah, it makes an appearance in this poem. Lessons in beekeeping. Upstairs in the old house, thousands of books wait to be sorted into boxes. My father's scrawled signature on every flyleaf. Louis L'Amour, Frank Yerby, Pearl S. Buck. Rough plywood and 2x4s, paperbacks in a double row, hardback book club editions, rows of Reader's Digest condensed books, Elizabeth Gouge's A Book of Comfort. The bookshelves are a hive of words, cacophonous barn, dead flies on the ledges, grizzled cherry tree tapping against warped window panes. My head aches with the smell of mold and dust, with pent-up stories, How to Win Souls, The Book of Knots, Lessons in Beekeeping, inscribed to my father's father, to Jean, 1918. So many books rhyme without reason, rough meter like a song long unsung. I work through the September afternoon, robbing the shelves, black bear at a bee tree, my father in a bee veil, prying up lids of bee boxes.
Very, very interesting connection between the sorting of those boxes and then the bee boxes. Did you plan that out, or did it happen by your arriving at the idea of the lessons in beekeeping?
This poem went through a lot of drafts. The Lessons in Beekeeping is this very small, kind of yellowish book. And it, you know, did have my grandfather's name in it. I didn't know that grandfather. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't make it into a poem. I kept trying and coming back to it a year or two later. And then it occurred to me to put more books in the poem and make it more about sorting books. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying about the extended metaphor and then the hive of words came to me.
You awfully pulled it together there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the poems that we write are often wiser than we are and teach us how to write them. Mm-hmm. So when I came to this poem, I didn't know how to write it, but...
It worked out,
mm-hmm.
but it took time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you had a Kairos moment at some point where you worked that out.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
So now we do have the life of the farm here, the kitchen.
Yeah, one way, I have a lot of poems about the farm and about my parents, and I had to make some hard choices to what to leave out. Mm-hmm. And one of the decisions I made is that it would had to be related to the farm, you know, somehow a dream of it or set there. And Some Glad Morning and a couple of the other poems about my mother are the only ones that were written or written about the time after we moved her away. Mm-hmm. But I felt that with the cemetery, which is all of our family members are there, that tied it back close enough to the land. So
yes.
Mm-hmm. Some Glad Morning. My mother had fallen in the night. One of her sisters called me and I drove down, took her to the clinic to get checked out, and then to Doty to the cemetery to see Dad. It was May, almost Memorial Day, and we took flowers. She stood over his grave and said, "God can do anything. He can turn back the time, and my husband will still be alive." Was it that visit or an earlier one, when she looked at me, eyes wide, and didn't know who I was? After the cemetery, we stopped at my cousin's house. Joan had just taken a strawberry rhubarb pie from the oven. She put on coffee. Gospel played on the radio. Some Glad Morning, All Fly Away. If I could turn back time, that's one of the moments I'd go back to. Everything homely in the best sense of the word. The pie crust perfectly golden, buttery and crisp. Local strawberries, rhubarb from Joan's garden. The filling hot, tart, and sugary. Fresh cream poured over the top. Someone once said, "Poetry is truth set to music, and so is pie." Truth was the three of us sitting together for the last time in a kitchen with rooster prints on the wall. My mother eating pie and laughing, still herself.
Well, you have done it. You've brought the past back to life there. That pie can almost be smelled, as you were talking about smells earlier. Can be tasted. Yes. Excellent poem that gives us a lot of the redolence of the life in that house.
Yeah, I stopped by her house yesterday after the family reunion and was really tempted to say, "Could I come inside and sit in your kitchen chair for a while?
And remind you of something?"
Uh-huh. I should have read her this poem.
Yes, that's it. That was your moment.
So this is more or less a sonnet. I don't often write in forms. Mm-hmm. And the title is the first line. The last time I heard her play the piano, my mother lifted her hands to the keys, and it was as if her dementia had been called out of the room by something more urgent. The way her memory had begun slipping from her years earlier, a companion stepping aside on the trail while she walked on. She lifted her hands to the keys and played an old hymn, played by heart, as people say, like cupping water and lifting it, dripping and glittering to your mouth. That was how the music felt and fell, filling the room, settling weightless and bright, a goldfinch lighting on a thistle, my mother playing the piano, forgetting her forgetting.
Yes, and the archetypal image that you had earlier of your cousin cupping her hand and in the water on the horse, you have sort of given us a recollection.
Oh, good.
You see that?
I think I found the perfect reader, David.
No, I'm not the perfect. I just noticed, this is what I noticed in it. I love things that have to do with things by heart. The way our mind is dispersed throughout our body, mm-hmm. into other organs, mm-hmm. and that they're the repositories of, mm-hmm. of things that aren't stored necessarily in the chemicals and tissue of the brain.
Exactly. My mother taught herself to play the piano so she could play in church. Never had a lesson.
So this one here is a sonnet. And you chose to put this in sonnet form. Was it the test for yourself, or did someone suggest going sonnet-wise?
Probably I did it backwards, and I realized it was about 14 lines long.
Okay.
Oh, it's a sonnet.
So it's sonnet-like in its number of lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I haven't even counted them. You know, this book is still undergoing some revisions until August 30th when it's due. Mm-hmm. But it's still sort of a little square like a sonnet. And I think that it has a turn with the like cupping water and lifting.
Yes.
It. So that's the main thing for me. It has to have that volta.
The goldfish lighting on a thistle. Again, that is archetypal in bird imagery.
Mm,
the mm-hmm, goldfinch mm-hmm. on a thistle, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whether it's Audubon or whoever would put a goldfinch anywhere, it's likely it'd be on a thistle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I am mythologizing quite a bit in this book. You know, did every detail literally happen? No. The cow didn't jump over the moon. but I still recall how the goldfinch would come through in one of the late spring months, and we would suddenly see goldfinch. You know, when you went to the barn to do your chores, there would be a flock of goldfinch, and probably saw one sitting on a thistle, because we had a lot of thistles.
Canada thistles, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You certainly saw bees bombing blossoms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So some mm-hmm. of that's not mythologized.
Yeah. The lost brother for Matthew. Now that our mother has forgotten your name, I see you everywhere. In a movie, you're the spy swapping one briefcase for another. You get off buses just as I find my seat, or I catch a glimpse of you disappearing in a crowd. Once I saw you at a 4th of July fireworks, another time, late one night in Galway. When I wear the blue sweater I bought there, I think of you. I've never mourned for you the way I've mourned others, and maybe that's why. I was glad you'd escaped your busted marriage, left behind your bad choices like a trail of crumbs to be eaten by birds. I've dreamed you living in a cabin in the trees at the back of our old place, reading Dostoevsky and writing poems. I'm not cracked. I know you're on that hillside where we left you, your coffin turned away from the marker because our mother didn't want your head down and feet up for all eternity. Even that secret has a way of animating you, as if you might sit up, dust off your hands with a that's that, and step back into your life. Our common ground was always a raft of ice. With you gone, it's broken smaller. Am I tired after all these years of carrying you with me? I'm not. You weigh nothing, a hole in my pocket. I never forget that you're not there.
And you revive the dead with this one. That's what poetry is good for.
Mm-hmm.
Even poets sing of the dead, but dead poets also continue to go on singing.
I forget what poet said. Poems exist to woo the past back.
Yes.
I often think of that. I think it was Donald Hall who said, all poems are essentially elegy.
Yes, I think this one fits elegy beautifully too, in the sense of dealing with death and the memories of passing, because blossoms. This is odd. This is an odd one.
It doesn't look like the other poems in the book.
No, the design is very different.
Mm-hmm. Because blossoms. Because late blossoms on the pear tree quiver in the breeze like hundreds of white moths. Because coffee in a chipped blue mug. Because the morning newspaper won't arrive until tomorrow's mail. Because insistent fist of the sprinkler on the garden all night outside your bedroom window. Because all walls are temporary and all roofs. Because the white blouse your mother left on the clothesline flaps languid in a breeze, lost soul, old sister. Because bluebells grow in the tall grass. Because the scent of pear blossoms. Because on the back porch your father sets aside his crossword puzzle and dozes. Because last night constellations reeled and an orange moon thin as a moth's wing fluttered over dark hills, because your life keeps falling back on its beginning.
And the reason that you chose the because repetitions, did you have a model?
I had all these images. After my dad died, it's about a 3-hour drive down there, but I would take my youngest daughter and we would go down once a week. Mm-hmm. And help and take her to the store. Mm. We were trying to get her not to drive because she was losing her memory. But I had all these images and also this very strong feeling that my dad was on the back porch, you know, even though he had passed by then. And it occurred to me that having an anaphora, you know, a beginning of each line that repeated would maybe bind it together. And I think it worked.
Yes, there's a lot of life in it. I mean, what you are doing is you're giving these vignettes of experience, of mm-hmm. perception, of feeling. And these becauses, I mean, you say, well, I did it because, or mm. I had that experience because, or... life happens because, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So whatever way you put it or think of anything in advance of, it has something to do with an experience, a thought, a concern, whatever life is mm-hmm. that you have to give the cause mm-hmm. for. Why are late blossoms on the pear tree quivering in the breeze? Say, well, because they do, that's what they do, mm-hmm. that is the experience of them. Yeah, I do like that, and I always think of why a poem would be divided up into an odd design, but it does make sense sometimes to do that, especially when you've got one that is without punctuation. And this helps, in a way, to make the mind think, is there punctuation there? Should I pause there? Or is there a reason to, am I silent long enough before I get to quiver?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? Because the mm-hmm. blank means a moment of silence. And then there's some bigger ones, or seem like bigger ones, but they're all perhaps pretty much the same space of a break. I wonder what it is that makes us do that.
Yeah, the choreography of the reading.
Yeah. It's a dance when you split mm-hmm. it up, because there's a step there.
Mm-hmm. I had very firmly in my mind as I worked on this a series of images, almost like photographs that you'd deal and, you know, put down in front of you on the table as you went through the poem.
Mm-hmm.
What can I say about this poem? This is a really late one. I wrote it rather recently.
Well, it seems to draw on some of the imagery with dryads and cemeteries,
mm-hmm.
and the creek.
You know, talking about the classics, I recently bought a map and of the area and framed it, and there are all these strange names, you know, Dryad and Ceres Hill, the Sylvan Cemetery. It's almost like there was some, you know, local Emerson who was naming these places.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think when you're out in the countryside, you can draw on those. I mean, you had caryatids, trees, mm-hmm. like caryatids.
Mm-hmm.
And they do sometimes seem like they're holding up the sky. Yeah. So, yeah, the imagery will come to mind. I mean, if you're versed in it. It won't if you're not, mm-hmm. but if you mm-hmm. are versed in it. But you're also trying to make connections throughout.
I hope so. Yeah.
Your poetry and those words are simply, they're markers. They're not words that you see every day. Some will have to look those up. There are those that will have to look up what a dryad is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I hope people know what a caryatid is.
And those, a caryatid, those right. Too.
Female figures on old mm-hmm. temples that serve as pillars.
Pillars, right. Yeah. Right. Sure. But it's good because mm-hmm. You're bringing people's minds to life with different things,
mm-hmm.
odd things. And Virgil's Georgics. How many know of Virgil's Georgics these days? Not so many have ever read them. So, this one.
And there's all the beekeeping lore in the Georgics. Yeah.
Beekeeping, yes. Very important.
Shall I read it?
Yes, love to hear this one.
Everything no longer there, and perhaps it will be pleasing to have remembered these things one day, Virgil the Georgics. Maps of the place where I was born bear names of towns that were never towns, stops on the railroad where a water tower stood, or a homestead so long gone you can't find a single chimney stone. Mernon, that's one name, grave marker for someone's stillborn dream, like Swem Creek, when no one remembers ever a man named Swem. The creeks that ran along our farm were Deer Creek, traveling a long way down out of the Doty Hills before disappearing into Elk Creek. Elk Creek ran to the South Fork of the Chehalis River along railroad tracks ripped up and carried off when I was 10. One creek farther up the logging road was called Eight, another Nine. You can find the town of Dryad on a map of ghost towns of Washington State, but once it was real, a sawmill town named by some lover of Greek myth. In my mother's time, company houses for sawmill workers, a post office, taverns, a church, a school. We kids biked to Dryad strawberry fields, bought penny candy at the Dryad general store, leaning even then under a burden of moss and brambles. The only reason to visit Dryad now is Sylvan Cemetery, where our great-grandparents lie under stones, time erasing their names. Sylvan, though the county took out all the trees, too much trouble to mow around.
Wow. Yeah. Everything no longer there.
Much earlier, we were talking about Robert Michael Pyle. Well,
yes,
he lives in Grays River Water Basin, is in the Willapa Hills.
Yes.
And I lived in the Willapa Hills.
You did.
So I've been rereading Sky Time in Grays River and just thinking about how it's wet down there. And if you don't use a building, it just falls apart.
It's not good
it
if you have
last.
Consumption and flus and things wrong with your lungs.
Right, right.
The moisture is
yeah,
so heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, now back to the animal life and the farming. Yes, and this is your father, mm-hmm. alive, taking part in the life of the farm.
The crossing. The last calf of the last spring of my father's life, it stood bawling, stuck on the west side of the pond's green circle. Dad called me to see, and we stood on the porch, watching through cracked panes. A bull calf, a Hereford, so fresh on the earth, white face and red body, still tufted where its dam had licked the afterbirth away. The pond wasn't deep, except with April's muck and rushes, the bursting of buttercups, pollywogs poised in their jelly like fruit waiting in apple blossoms. The calf braced itself against all persuasion, head down, legs splayed, its voice a steady bellow like a bell tolling. We were astonished at how quickly my father crossed from this life to the next, the years falling behind him like finished chores. In the 10 years that my mother declined and lingered, I often pictured Dad waiting, impatient, tapping the pane as the calf that morning gave in, splashing through the mucky divide, trotting up the hill path after its kind.
Mm. Yeah, some lovely phrases in that one, too. The pollywogs poised in the jelly. And, yes, the bellow that has its echo in the bell tolling. You really worked out some lovely sounds there.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's got its rhyming features, mm-hmm. All woven in inside.
I love to read. As I work, I read my poems out loud over and over and over, looking for the words that will, I don't know, chime together and mm-hmm. lift it.
Yes. Yes. This one was well worked out. And was this one that you wrote early on in the book? Was this one from...
I did write this one quite a while ago. And my friend Kun Woon published it in his online journal. And that's been quite a few years ago, before Mom died. So I think the poem evolved a little more after her death.
Mm-hmm. So it went through changes. Mm-hmm. Since. Mm-hmm. So an earlier version can be seen in the online...
I'm a relentless reviser.
Mm-hmm. Well, most poets are. There's never a finished poem. If you... keep it long enough, it will go through many changes. Leaves of Grass, how about changes in that one?
Oh, yes.
You know, he never finished
it. And he published different versions of it.
Yes, he did. He never finished it. Oh, this one here, the pear. We have something now that is the, not the pear from the tree necessarily, a store-bought pear. This one,
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
still you needed it.
Yeah.
Because
but
it was a different kind.
My mother had... kept those butter knives with the Bakelite handles, and when we cleaned out the farmhouse, I took them. So this is true. I do love to use those knives in the morning, especially. Pear. Buttering my morning toast, I use her knife with the yellow Bakelite handle, and my grandmother is here, shuffling across my kitchen in her paisley house dress, 40 years after her death. It is November, month of her birth in 1898. Leaves from the big maples are the yellow of the knife's Bakelite handle and the yellow of the feathers of the china hen that perched on her shelf, yellow of the linoleum floor where I took my first steps, yellow like the store-bought pear on my windowsill.
And the yellow also, whether they're there or not, brings in a bee.
Ah,
because
good.
Because you've had, I mean, from your reading of the first, mm-hmm. with the yellow and the hive and the honey, so whether you have bees in it or not, mm-hmm. that there's bound to be that, here's the yellow again, a color you're very fond of, and for good reasons,
yeah,
too.
Well, it fits with this manuscript. And I, especially once I took out the sections in the book and made it all continuous, I was really conscious of wanting certain words to repeat, almost like pulling threads through a tapestry. So yes. That's good. I'm glad it's evident.
And a dream, of yet another animal, but not a cow, a mare.
So this was the last one in the packet I sent you. Yes. It's not the last poem in the book.
I believe so. That's right. There's more than 20 poems.
I had emailed the editor and said, I'm adding a poem, such and such a poem, and I'm taking out Dream of a Dun Mare. And she emailed, she's very generous, and whatever I want to do is fine. But she emailed right back and said, that is my favorite poem. So we had this whole email exchange. I said, well, it was really a dream about my mother. And I know that, but I don't think a reader will know. And she says, it doesn't matter. It works. So I left it in the manuscript.
You cannot force the reader to know what you're on about.
Right, right. I can't like deliver myself with each book and explain the poems. Dream of a Dun Mare. Lock clicked open, gate pushed back, a dun mare so near waking's ledge, it was as if I held her lead rope in my hand, tugging it so she swung her head around, jingle of her halter, one pale eye fixed on me. She was ribby, sway-backed, freckled with healed over saddle sores, her belly heavy with promise. Smell of cracked leather, urine-soaked straw. I woke filled with emotion like a bucket with water, sorrow at her brokenness, joy that down the night's steep passages I might yet ride.
Yes, there's no reason to keep this one out of the repertoire of the poems. You have had horse riding in them. And here, this is, and you've had dreams, and this is a dream and horse riding or horse imaging, whether or not you ride the horse. But you have at the end that you have the inclination that you might yet ride. And so we go back to these dreams, and maybe you'll ride in your dreams.
Mm-hmm. And going back to what you said about the bricolage. Gathering up the pieces and trying to make something whole, which seems like a definition of what art does.
Art is a lot of bricolage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Making something from odds and ends.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe what we have to do too is read a lot of other people's poems, and we don't even know that we're incorporating images and thoughts and music and all sorts of bits and pieces, the materials from things that we have taken in that have settled somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just peeling them off bit by bit and collaging them together in our own.
Oh, I love
works.
That image.
Yeah.
It's a little macabre.
We're never done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As you have found by mixing the pages of your order, instead of going with the order that you had segregated into sections, you decided, no, let's interleave, let's weave these throughout.
And it was that overwhelming feeling that these people were still with me. You know, I couldn't have them early in the book and then move on. They had to move on with me somehow.
Yes. Well, we have been listening here on Sound Poetry to the life in Lewis County on the banks of the Elk Creek and living with the family of Bethany Reed, her grandmother, her mother, her father, uncles, brothers, cousins, animals that she is fond of, and bees. But she has brought so much back to life that you can't help but feel invigorated from reading the poetry. Thanks for the elegies of a farm, and Bethany, it was a real pleasure.
Thank you. It was indeed a pleasure.